Welcome, everybody. I'm Jared. He's DJ, and this is Number One Bullshit.
Hey, all you fight friends out there. We have a bit of a disclaimer. We had some technical issues with our mics that we didn't catch while recording this episode. But don't worry. We're still coming in hot with content. We got that fuego in the mic. Enjoy.
One of the amazing things about Fight Night cards is we go from Apex, where there is not a ton of like fights of consequence, you know, some intriguing stuff, but predominantly prospects. And then we go into a roadshow Fight Night, where every fight, it feels like, on this card has something interesting or intriguing about it. Not going to dive into every single fight, but there's a couple that we're just gonna rapid fire hit real quick before we really dive in. Yeah, absolutely. So at bantamweight, Angel Pacheco versus Kaelin Loughran. Still have not figured out how to say his last name in, and that's just going to be a fun one. Pacheco had that absolute war with Danny Silva on Dana White's Contender Series, and then Loughran, a big-time prospect, debuted in the UFC against Taylor Lopoulos, which that's a huge step up in competition for him. I think that was his ninth professional fight, and Lopoulos is a longtime vet of the sport who has done very, very well in the UFC previously. So tough fight, drop that one. Really want to see Loughran in this one. And then another prospect, Victoria Dudikova, taking on Melissa Gatto. Now, Gatto was at 8-0-2. She then dropped back-to-back decisions, Tracy Cortez and Ariane Lipsky. So nothing to be ashamed of. Was ranked, no longer ranked. And Dudikova sitting right there now, too. She's 8-0. Little underwhelming of a performance last time she had that debut where Stella Nunes, you know, broke her arm, but then she had that kind of lackluster performance against Jinyu Fry, where we were like, what is going on? Apparently what was going on was ass staff, as we talked about. So excited to see what she looks like, not with a ass staff infection.
I'm glad you're professional with your medical diagnosis.
Yeah. Ass staff. Yeah. And then we also, and y'all know I really want to talk about, we just don't have time. My man, Señor Perfecto. Bill Algeo taking on Kyle Nelson. I mean, we know Algeo is always going to be fun. He does have that like kind of Corey Sandhagen, you know, bouncing around, faint heavy style. And then Nelson, he's just solid, right? Like we saw what he did to Fernando Padilla. And then we just saw what Padilla did to Pajuelo. Like we know how good Padilla is. And so for Nelson to do what he did to him, this is going to tell us a lot about Algeo, you know, because he has been hit or miss. And then on the main card, I don't really want to talk about, but feel like I do have to mention it. Chris Weidman is fighting again. He's taking on Bruno Silva. I was kind of hoping the fight against Brad Tavares was going to be his right off into the sunset moment. And no, now he's coming back and fighting Bruno Silva, who has a devastating knockout power. We know Weidman has gotten chinny. I don't think this is a great matchup for Weidman, but I hope regardless of what happens, this is it. Like, I hope this is it. He's fighting in Atlantic City. He's a Long Island guy. Like, hopefully it's just, hey, I had to get one more, you know, in front of the hometown crowd before getting out.
I think if he wins, it's not his last one, but we'll see.
Gosh, I hope so. I hope so. Win or lose, he's out, because that was like a majestic run, his start, and then it's fallen off precipitously. So that's
nice work.
That is not good. But now the ones that we will.
Than me, man.
what you think? You're better than me, college boy. But we will start off in the middleweight division, and that is a fight between kind of similar fighters, and Andre Petrosky and Jacob Malkoon.
Yeah, I mean, Petrosky has power. We know that.
Yeah.
And yeah. I forgot about this. Malkoon got put up by Phil Hawes. I just forgot about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Quickly.
Like, yeah.
Quickly.
So it's like when you combine the power from one side and potentially getting knocked out. And Petrosky has that quick loss to Michelle Pajeda. But what we're seeing for Pajeda is like
special.
And this is a good comeback fight for him, right? This is a good one to come back. And Petrosky has some good submission wins. Like, he wasn't just on my radar, and going back, like, God, this guy's like pretty even. So cool little matchup, but that power and you don't know if someone's ever going to be chinny. It could be a quick night.
Yeah. I'm very intrigued by it because It's two really, really talented grapplers that carry knockout power. And when you hear, and I literally mean hear, like put on headphones and listen to a Jacob Malkoon fight.
Yeah.
When he's hitting guys on the ground, it is thudding ground and pound. It reminds me of like heavyweight type ground and pound. Like, it is loud. But you look at it, he's 7-3, which I guess is not the best record, but you look at the losses, they, you know, got put out by Phil Hawes. It happens. Yep. Phil Hawes, despite being chinny, has like insane power, puts people out. Decision to Brendan Allen, and then he got DQ'd for really elbowing Cody Brundage horribly in the back of the head.
Yeah.
So, you know, very talented guy. And then with Petrosky, he had lost to old short hair Pooh Bear on the on Ultimate Fighter, and then he loses to Michel Pajeda. But like you look at his, you know, GM3 Gerald Meerschaert in his pants fight, like it was a good fight. Now one thing that's of concern is he gassed out round three.
Yeah.
Right, like he was pretty exhausted by then. But yeah, this is, I think both of these guys are that next evolution of the Johnny Hendricks type, very good grappler, devastating power. You know, could end up being one that stalemates a little bit when you see that. Could be a bit of a boxing match. But I think either one of these guys with the win can then kind of start to build, because it is a deep division and both these guys are extraordinarily talented.
And yeah, you're right. This is one of the fights that's like, once you do this, keep that momentum up.
Yes. Yeah. This is a good, like, build to the next thing type fight. And then we have a rematch at light heavyweight, which I am actually very, very excited about, partially just because one of the participants is the Pleasure Man, Anton Turkali. And he is rematching Ibo Adlon. Their first fight took place in 2020 under the Brave FC banner, and the only career loss for Aslan. And these two guys could not look any more different. You know, Pleasure Man is like kind of tall, lanky, not super defined, and Aslan is on that Dolce Lungiambula, looks like a you know, early 90s comic book hero, just muscled up beyond belief. But because he's built like that, he gassed out horribly in their first fight, and it only went into the second round. I mean, Aslan has only had two fights go outside of the first round, right? It is very, very quick work for him usually. And so, and all, you know, obviously all 12 of those are knockouts.
Of course.
All 12 of his wins. But I'm interested to see. But what happens here is Aslan improved. Is he going to have a gas tank? Is he going to need to have a gas tank? The Pleasure Man is, he's durable, right? He's been in there with some guys. His fight with Vitor Petrino, amazing. But he did get shut off by Tyson Pedro in his last fight. And so now it's like, okay, is the chin going to start to go now? Because he is somebody who has eaten shots in every single one of his fights. Like, that's just what happens with him. But you want to talk about an unfortunate introduction into the UFC. All three of his losses in the UFC, and that is to Jailton Almeida,
rough,
Vitor Petrino,
rough,
Tyson Pedro.
Rough.
Yeah, like, oh,
but,
God.
But even with that, though, man, at some point, you got to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this ain't an easy fight to win. This isn't a gimme for him.
Yeah.
So, like, you're going on your fourth fight, and that pressure to be like, I got to fucking win because, you know, how do you say his name? Oh, I'll just say Anton. Anton Turk.
No. The Pleasure Man.
Okay, sorry. The Pleasure Man. he's wild, right? Not in a negative way. He's wild. But when you haven't won, like, how does that fuck with your mind? If you lose again, does the UFC cut him? I mean,
they have to.
They have
He's
to.
Not
right?
Sam Alvey. But that, he's not Sam Alvey.
Yeah, that's the thing. But Aslan can put him out in the first round too. I know he's durable, but it's not like it can't happen. This is gonna be tight butthole for Anton, because the stakes are super high for him to lose this fight. You know, like,
yeah.
It's got it. I can't imagine what it feels like to be like, not everyone's Tony Ferguson either. Right? I can't go on. You can't go on a 7-fight skid.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a banger while it lasts.
Yeah. I'm very interested because, you know, we talk about the light heavyweight needs prospects. You know, Petrino is that guy right now. He's getting his shot against Anthony Smith. But Aslan could be another one, right? Has the look just being muscled up, has the style, yep. All of his victories are, you know, knockouts. And so has that ability, but there's going to be glaring or, you know, big questions, I should say, about when you're putting people out that quickly. And the last time these two guys fought, the calf kick was a bit of a problem for him, and he gassed out. I mean, he hit Turkali multiple times and just couldn't get it done, and then gassed out and gets choked out. Yep. And so has he shorn that part of his game up, or is it I just needed to get him out of there? You know, is it that? So I'm interested to see that, because if Aslan does, if he puts out Pleasure Man, yeah, ideally you'd want to see it be a bit of a prolonged fight just to get those questions answered. But regardless, you put him out, now you're starting to build that prospect resume. And if you're Pleasure Man, you said it, right? He has to win. He's not going to have he'll have a job, but he's not going to be in the UFC if he loses this fight.
Can't. I mean, unless it's like fight of the year contender type shit, maybe, but yeah. And he loses, but I don't see it being that.
Yeah, and then a fight that I am super excited about, but apparently whoever is putting together these cards is not excited about. I think it is very disrespectful, its placement on the card. We have number 5, Gina John Jadoba, and number 10, Lupi Godinez. Godinez is somebody that we both are very, very excited about, and John Jadoba, all she has done is just win when she has to, you know? I mean, her last performance against Marina Rodriguez was very, very good, but this is on the undercard. Not even featured prelim, which I get based on who is... Yeah, based on who's in that, right? And we'll talk about that one in a second. But I do think it's disrespectful. You have a top 10 matchup at strawweight, and you're throwing on the undercard of a fight night.
Do you think it's just because there's so many, like, heavy weight classes on this card? I mean, like, yeah, what could be the reasoning for that? You know, it's very...
Yeah. I think part of it is when you look at the main card, you have some guys that put on pretty awesome performances. Chita Njokuani is, you know, he'll put people out. Ruja Boyov is, you know, same boat. Like, fights do not go to decisions.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, and then they're going to put Weidman and Bruno Silva just because I think they're anticipating a knockout. But I think if you're trying to build the sport up, I think Lupi Godinez has the ability to be a, you know, not like a superstar, but to be somebody that you can throw your promotional weight behind,
yep.
Right? Like, she's somebody that's always going to be on the Noche card. She's somebody, whenever you go to Mexico, you can put her on the card. Whenever you go to Canada, you can put her on the card, because she's a Canadian citizen as well. Like, she's somebody that's very marketable, and is willing to throw down. Had her first two fights in the UFC, took part 10 days apart from each other, I think it was. Like,
wow.
I don't understand that. You know, unless they just think that, you know, maybe it's going to be a bit of a wake up moment for her with John Jadoba, who's a world champion Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner, a little older, especially for women's MMA at 35. But you look at John Jadoba, I hate that she doesn't get the respect she deserves. You know, she has 3 losses: Esparza, Carla Esparza, former champ, former 2-time champ, Mackenzie Dern, who is probably the only other person in that weight class that can match John Jadoba's jiu-jitsu credentials.
Yep.
And then Amanda Ribas.
Yep.
And they all went to decisions. You know, so she's not getting finished. I wish she would get a little bit more respect, because she's, you know, obviously it's all about the grappling for her. I think it's between her and Mackenzie Dern for who the best jiu-jitsu practitioner in that division is. And then she has started to add the ground and pound. When you look at what she did to Marina Rodriguez, who was a fight away from a title, right? Well, a fight away from fighting for the title. Rodriguez was right there. And what she did to her, she added the ground and pound into her game. She has a, John Jadoba, I'm talking about, has almost a more wrestling type style with her jiu-jitsu. You see the, you know, the Dagestani leg irons, where she's using her lower body a lot from top position to control her opponents. I do think it's a fan-friendly style of grappling. It's not, you know, just lay on somebody and hold them down. Like, she's hunting stuff up. She's adding ground and pound to it.
Yeah, and with John Jadoba, I mean, she swings wildly, but It has power. It doesn't seem like it has a lot of great technique, but it seems mm-hmm. like that wildness is just to get your hands on you to take you down, right? So, mm-hmm. and then on the other side of that, you have Lupi Godinez, who's clearly slicker boxing, you know? So it's going to be like what I would imagine this fight is Godinez wants to keep it on the feet. Jandre Dober wants to put it on the ground. I have a wild take, though. If it's on the ground too long, I think Jandre Dober can submit her. Will submit her. I think if it's on the ground for too long, I don't think it's a can she submit her. I think it'll happen, and it's really gonna be a tale of can Lupi get back up, or I think that if it's on the ground, let's say 2.5 minutes of control time and a round, I think we're talking about Lupi surviving rather than just getting down there and not being able to do much.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be interesting because I think the wildness for Jandre Dober, if it happens, she's gonna get tagged on that chin. That chin's gonna get tested, dude.
Yes, yeah, and I think sometimes it's interesting because sometimes these people that have a very orthodox style, like a Lupi, right, hands up high, like good boxing, it's almost they almost don't know what to do when there's somebody standing across from them who's presents as wild, I'll say, because yes, it looks unorthodox and all that, but ultimately, look at Khabib striking. That was not textbook by any means, but it fit the game that he had to accomplish what he was trying to accomplish. And I think Jandre Dober's striking does that to a degree, and so sometimes that can kind of confuse the fighter. You look at Godinez versus Tabitha Ricci. Tabitha Ricci also has kind of a more traditional type striking style, and Godinez was able to use great distance management. She was able to use her footwork and kind of corral Baby Shark, and I don't know if you can necessarily do that against somebody who's wild like Jandre Dober, because it's cool, corral me, press me up against the fence, I just gotta get hands on you.
Yep.
Walk me down, I'm gonna throw wild into the clinch, and then now we're living in my world. So I am very interested to see how that distance management side of things plays out. But Godinez is somebody that I think by year's end we'll be talking about as a contender for strawweight. I mean, 4-fight win streak, just progressively getting better competition. I don't think it can be understated the camp that she's getting work with now, with Grasso, with Aldana, with Diego Lopez, right? Doing grappling rounds with Diego Lopez probably going to help you for this fight against Jandre Dober.
Absolutely.
So that Godinez is somebody that I'm very, very high on. I'm very interested to see how she passes this test, or if she can pass this test. And if you're Jandre Dober, if you get this win, get on the mic. Hey, fighting down this 4-fight win streak, get my name in there next, because when you look at the 115 rankings, right, you have Suarez, who's right there, but other than that, there's Lemos and Draj, the only other people ahead of Jandre Dober, and obviously Yan Shonan and Wei Li, who are fighting at 300. But I mean, down the road, you're telling me you wouldn't want to see Suarez versus versus Jandre Dober? I mean, just for the grappling aspect, or Lupi, you put that fight in Mexico, Suarez versus Lupi.
And I think kind of what we talked about on Monday's podcast about Justin Taffa just getting up, or just stopping the takedown. Godinez working with
Diego Lopez.
That has to be part of the game plan too. Is when she's doing this, this is how you can stay on your feet. When she's doing this, this is how you can get up with not just explosion but technique. So it's going to be real fun to watch it. But it's different when you're in there, right? It's different when someone has their hands on you and they're going full force and you're like, fuck, this person has the position on me. This person has, I mean, how many people, you brought up Khabib, how many people trained for Khabib and then they got in there with Khabib? It's just different.
Yeah. So. Yeah. There's a reason Ronda Rousey could armbar everybody.
Yep.
Everyone knew it was coming, but it's very different when somebody is that skilled.
Correct.
And that good at one thing to be like, oh, yeah, no, that's, yeah, no, I knew exactly what you were doing. I just couldn't do anything about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So, I mean, and fight a consequence for, like you're saying, for Jandre Dober. I'm not saying
that. Last run for her.
How do you say
35 years old, top five. Jandre Dober.
Jandre Dober. for her, you're right. It's like, I just fought down so far. Give me the next person up. And Tatiana Suarez can't stay healthy. I'm calling her out and being like, show up, you know? Show up.
Yeah.
If you're supposed to be that person, show up.
Yeah, hey, you're next in line. Don't worry, I'll be ready. I'll be on wait because I know you ain't gonna be there.
Exactly. Yeah.
You like, know, like right, that's
all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the four are
your most hated fighter.
Yeah, we have the fighting pride of Clarksville, Rossview High School's finest. Nate the Train Lanwear taking on Jamal Emmers. He was initially supposed to be fighting Pat Sabatini,
which would have been awesome.
And yeah, and this is just a cursed card for that camp. We talked about it last week, but you got Sabatini was supposed to be on this card. Sean Brady was supposed to be on this card. Neither one is actually on this card. But this is, I actually think, a more dangerous matchup for Lanwear just with how the style of Emmers. Because Emmers is wild and carries crazy power.
That motherfucker is wild, bro.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, like spinning shit, you know, he was getting calf kicked pretty good by Jack Jenkins and then was like, cool, next fight, I'm going to calf kick you. Like, I didn't like how I felt.
That shit hurt, man.
Yeah. So I'm going to learn that and do it. You know, fought really well against Jack Jenkins, I thought. And Jenkins is a very technical kickboxer. Now, he did eat up Emmers' leg. Like, Emmers' calf was beat up in that fight, but you then didn't see his calf get chewed up in his next fight. And I just think, I think Lanwear he's a wild man. He likes to brawl, and that's not always the best thing for somebody who carries great power. When we have seen Lanwear lose in the UFC, it's been knees other than Danny Gay.
Yeah.
It's been knees up the middle from tall, lanky fighters. And what is Jamal Emmers? A tall, lanky fighter. So that is dangerous.
But to give Lanwear credit, because he did lose to Ige, but he looked good. It's not like he just got whooped down. And Emmers,
he threatened him.
Huh?
He threatened him in the fight.
And Emmers is a win-one, lose-one for, what, 8 fights in a row? And his last one, he won one, right? So, but, like, we already know about Nate. He's there to tear shit up. And so is Emmers. This is going to be, like, this is the perfect feature prelim. It's the perfect one for it. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be violent. Do you think it's going to be stopped? Or do you think this is a decision fight?
Ooh, I don't know, because both guys are tough.
I know. That's the thing. Like, this one is tough. This one would be hard to be like, oh, it's going to be a finish in round 2. I don't know. This could be like a third round starting to get a little sloppy, you know, like just winging things because we're both beating the shit out of each other. This is an exciting-ass matchup.
Yeah, I think if it finishes, it's either going to be a knockout for Emmers if Ken Flo has anything to say about this one. And then I think if Nate the Train's going to finish it, it's going to be a submission. I think, like, hurt Emmers, submit him kind of deal. He's shown an ability to submit very talented people like Ludovic Klein. But yeah, very, very dangerous. It's going to be a dogfight. It's going to be fun to watch. Y'all know who I will be backing in that. Ross View's finest. And our main card is, like the rest of this card, just absolutely loaded. One that I'm super, super excited about is the Nursultan Rujaboyev and Cedricus Dumas. That is...
I like saying Nursultan for some reason.
Nursultan,
yeah. I just like saying that name. Hope he wins.
It's just for somebody who has, what, 53 professional fights?
That's it.
God. Or no, sorry, 43 professional fights. It almost feels like we don't know a lot about him. Because he's fought guys in the regionals. Within his last like 4 or 5 fights, he fought a guy who was a 40-plus fight veteran with a losing record. Mm-hmm. So doesn't have great strength of schedule. But then he goes in there and starches Bruno Fajeda, who was, you know, oh my God, he, you know, put out RoboCop. Here's this guy that's this next big prospect. And then he just puts him out very quickly.
Yeah.
And so he's a bit of an unknown. And he is probably one of like 2 or 3 middleweights that would actually be bigger than Dumas. You know, Dumas is long, like tall, skinny dude, But Nursultan's 6'4", I think.
6'5" is what they're saying.
6'5", yeah. Crazy. I mean, he's enormous.
Yeah.
He is absolutely enormous. And for having 43 fights, Kenflo, 11 knockouts, 20 submissions, like, here's a guy that just fights. And yeah, and so it's going to be interesting. And then you look at Dumas, who has 10 professional fights. Like, this is very interesting matchmaking in that sense. But Dumas has improved so much.
Yeah.
Every single fight. I mean, he was just finishing people left and right before he got into the UFC. He then gets, I mean, just absolutely out-grappled by a friend. You know, looked like a fish out of water, did not look comfortable. And then in his next two fights, goes and out-grapples Cody Brundage.
Not bad.
Who is a good grappler in his own right. And then out-grapples a Zaitar. And so, yeah, every time this guy steps into the cage, he looks exponentially better.
Yeah.
Like, he looks so much better. And let's not forget, he's been grappling a lot. He's got devastating power. And use elbows, knees. I mean, he sat a Zaitar down with the jab. Like, he's... what's a powerful dude, but so is Nursultan.
Yeah, and that's the... that's going to be the collision of this fight, right? Like, who has that power advantage and who can hurt the other either quicker or more frequently? Because, like, you know, like, you can hurt somebody, but they're not wobbled. They're not out of the fight. But that damage is going to, like, build. Who's going to have that damage build up? I don't really know because, like you said, I don't know much about Nursultan. Nursultan, yeah. Other than he's got a dope-ass name. But...
which you don't know.
Exactly. I can't say it. I would because I was trying to say his last name. And I was like, I saw the V. I was like, I'm not gonna try to. So added the V where it doesn't need to be.
Old nurse dog.
Yeah, but it's you know, this is a fun fight. Yeah. I just don't know. I can't even begin to know, like, because, you know, we have to. This is one of the ones we're gonna have to pick. I can't even, like, begin to think of what actually is gonna happen. So really. You know, it's hard when you see Uzbekistan. You're like, I mean, come on. He's got to be the better grappler, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, and the 20 submissions tells you that, too.
So, I mean, even though Cedricus is getting better with that aspect of his game, it's like, God, is he even close to it? You don't know. So this is one of those, like, I'm going to be watching it like, I have no idea what's going to happen in this fight.
Yeah, like, I want to find out.
I have a prediction about what probably is going to happen in the Weidman fight. I just have a prediction about it because... whatever, but this one, I'm like, I have no fucking clue, man.
Yeah, and those are the fun ones. Exactly. This fight could end with either guy getting the submission, either guy getting the knockout, or either guy getting the decision and be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, not surprising in any way, shape, or form.
Exactly.
But also why the fights are so fun, because we do not know what's going to happen. Co-main, which was originally going to be the main event because it was going to be Luque versus Sean Brady. But then Sean Brady was like, hey, I actually didn't sign that contract. I'm not going to be ready to fight. And the UFC was like, oh, no, that's cool. We were going to do Blanchfield Fiore for the main event anyways.
Anyways, huh? Got you.
Yeah. April Fools. Brady not fighting. So now we have Luque taking on Joaquin Buckley. And I'm actually very excited for this one. Because this is going to tell us a ton about Joaquin Buckley.
Yeah, because, and man, Luque seems to be a more skilled fighter, like, well-rounded. And my theory is, I can't see Luque getting his hands on Buckley and not being able to take him down. So, you know, that's what's going to be. But Buckley's so powerful and explosive. This seems like a power and explosion type of fight to a technical fighter. Comparison, and then with those types of things, you start wondering, like, okay, well, if the fight doesn't get stopped on Buckley's end, when does that fatigue come in? And if that fatigue comes in, Luque should be able to take this fight over.
I would think so. Well, rewatching the Buckley Morono fight, Buckley at 170, he's not having those gas tank issues that he had at 185.
Well, he didn't have that, right?
Yeah, but he went the full 15 and looked fresh.
He did look fresh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, granted, part of that was he was putting a beautiful game plan because Morono is an absolute dog.
Yep.
You know, gets you in, drags you in deep waters, and like, hey, here's where the fight's going to take place. And Buckley did a great job from a game plan standpoint of just attacking the body immediately.
Yep.
And doing it for the duration. And by the end of it, Morono was the one that was gassed out, and Buckley looked fresh. You know, can Luque get Buckley into grappling situations that are going to force the gas tank, you know, start draining on that gas tank? I don't know. And there's that fine line with guys that are cutting to get to a weight class. Like Buckley, you know, used to fight at 185. Is his gas tank not going to be there because he's too drained? Or was he not disciplined before and now he's doing all the cardio he needs to, and 170 is where he should have been the whole time? Because when he's actually doing the road work, doing what he needs to do, that's the weight class, and so his cardio is going to be better.
But we also saw a really grinding type of fight with Luque versus RDA, and he went 25 minutes, right? So we know that we can do it. We don't know if Buckley, just because he's had those questions in the past. So that grinding type of fight, it's like, if I don't get him out quick, how does that look like if I make it to the third round and I have some guy that's putting that pressure on me? Is it a Jeff Neal situation? I'm not Jeff Neal. I'm sorry. Neil Magny situation with Mike Malott, where it's like, I'm taking over in the third round and I can finish it. Or does Buckley all over the place and just like, you know, pow, right in the kisser type shit, and it's over. You know, it's real interesting to see these types of matchups where you kind of know what both of them are bringing to the table and who's going to be able to implement their fighting style over the other one consistently. So,
yeah.
Let me finish this thought.
Yeah.
Because even if Buckley implements his fighting style, let's say the first round, he's explosive, he's hurting him and stuff, and the fight resets at round two, and Luque can do what he does. So it's going to be real interesting.
Yeah. We know who Luque is.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there was a time where it looked like he might have been a title contender. Like, after the beating he took from Jeff Neal and getting a brain bleed, he is not that guy anymore. The only fight we've seen of him since then was the RDA fight. You know, RDA is not carrying the power that he used to. The style of fight did not lend itself to a firefight. It was a lot of Luque just pressing him against the cage. Like you alluded to, a very grinding type style.
Yep.
With Buckley, like, we're gonna find out, one, can he fight the fight he wants to fight?
Yep.
Is he able to dictate against a guy who has been in there with the best of the best? Can he dictate where the fight takes place? If he can do that against Luque, like, that's
impressive.
That says a lot. Yes. And Luque's number 11.
Yep.
So now Buckley, who is unranked, you're going to start getting some of those guys. Yeah. And you know, Buckley's going to talk that shit. He'll hop on the mic. He'll call out people like this right now. This performance or this fight has the ability. It's the stage for Buckley to capitalize on the viral moment that everyone thought was going to lead to superstardom from him with the jump spinning back kick to Impa Kasanganai. But now it hasn't gone that way.
Yeah,
and it was because he was fighting at the wrong weight class. Mm-hmm. But now he has the ability to put away a very well-respected veteran of the game. And I shouldn't say put away. Put on a good performance, whether it's decision, whether it's, you know, knockout, whatever. Put on a good performance against somebody that's widely respected in the sport. Hop on the mic, say some dope shit, and then have the highlight reel that he, you know, already has in his back pocket. Well, guess what? It's off to the races then.
Can I make a prediction? Usually do the fight matchup prediction, but if Buckley wins and he gets on that microphone, I can't see how Sean Brady's name doesn't come out of his mouth. I just can't see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, why wouldn't you, right? Like,
oh yeah. That's
cuz you're not going to get the top 5 type shit. You're not going to get certain people, but either give me MVP, which won't happen, or Sean Brady.
You know who I'm calling if I'm him?
Is he ranked still?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, hold on. Let me think. If you're walking Buckley and you just won against Vicente Luque, you're not saying Neil Magny.
No.
Okay, Jeff Neal?
No.
Who?
IMG.
Ah, he's not going to get that one.
But I'm calling for
sure,
it.
Sure.
I'm saying, hey, you were supposed to fight this guy. you bitched out, right? And now, which I'm not saying that.
I know you're speaking
of Buckley.
Yes.
Like you bitched out. I just took care of him. Let's go.
Yeah.
Like you're not fighting anybody.
Yeah.
Like let's go.
Well, and I think Machado Gary's got Colby's attention. He might be getting.
He does.
Colby. Yeah, and that is just that's why I said it's not going to happen because if I'm Gary and I can get Colby, Colby has to fucking beat somebody that still fights in the welterweight division. You know, like so if I'm IMG, I'm like my mind. I'm doing the Chandler Connor thing where it's like Chandler's. I'm not taking another fight. I'm getting my payday. If I'm Gary, I'm like I'm beating up Colby because just imagine him and Colby on the mic and then him beating him. Shit.
Yeah, but if I'm Buckley, I'm calling for it.
Oh,
that'd be the one because IMG's like on everyone's radar, and that's the one I'm calling for. But getting through Luque is no easy task. One of the things that'll be interesting is the body work. You know, how does Southpaw Orthodox like can Buckley work the body? He did it great against Morono. Is that something he can do against Luque, or is he going to be a little more tentative with kicks?
Yeah.
You know, with somebody because he doesn't want to go to the ground with Luque. Going to be fun.
Let's go ahead and talk about our next title contender for the women's flyweight.
Yeah, I really want to, but real quick before that, okay, I do want to tell everyone go over to X at number one BS pod. Give us a follow. That way you are getting the fight picks. This will be the last one of season one. So we got, so. Going to be interesting. We'll see what happens. Vote in the featured prelim poll. Y'all already know who my vote will be for. And then that way you're also getting all of the wonderful content that we put out there. Also, give me a follow at YFF Jared. That way you will know when or you'll be able to see the work that I'm doing over there at Fansided MMA. And then on your podcast listening service of choice, follow, like, subscribe. We are dropping 3 episodes a week in most weeks now. The Monday review, the Wednesday preview, and then that Friday F update. So you get all of this wonderful content. But now, back to the matchup that we have been very, very excited about since it was announced.
So before we even talk about how they match up, I believe Blanchfield has been scheduled for a 5-minute fight but didn't make it there. She won.
Five-rounder.
Yeah. Against Andrade.
Yeah.
So she got it. Do you think if this goes to – okay, if this goes 5 rounds, who do you think stronger in the 5th? Just who do you think is – you know what, Jared, this is the 5th round. Who do you think's got the upper hand in this moment?
I'm going to say Blanchfield.
Okay.
But I think it's going to depend on the style of fight.
Okay.
Because both of them Blanchfield wants to grapple.
Mm-hmm.
Fior wants to kickbox.
Mm-hmm.
Fior has very good takedown defense.
Yep.
91%, I think, takedown defense rate in the UFC. But if she's having to fight off takedowns repeatedly, that's not what she does. Like, she's good at it, but that's not what she does, so she's going to get tired. Now, if Blanchfield is fighting for takedowns and can't get them, she doesn't have a very high takedown rate. I mean, it's like in the 30s or 40s. It's not great, but that's her style.
But and speaking on that, she got Santos down, but it wasn't until Santos got tired, right? It was like a grind. It wasn't an easy thing. So to your point, if I can just hold you off, you might not get me down at all.
Yes. And so Blanchfield's game is that clinch chain wrestling, you know, just being relentless with it. And so if she's not able to get the takedown, if she can't manage the distance, that's going to be a problem and she could gas out. Because if Fior is working the body, you know, making Blanchfield repeatedly try to enter, not even get to the clinch and working the grappling from there, but having to fight Fior's footwork to try to cut the cage off, to try to push her back. And it's a road show, bigger cage.
Yeah.
Right. Blanchfield she's from Jersey. This is the hometown crowd. She's going to have, I know they're both in the headliner, but her media obligations are going to be a little more. What does all of that do? Is the heart rate up? What's happening there? So I think there's a lot of factors there for Blanchfield. So I don't know who's going to gas out. I think if, you know, conventional wisdom would say, oh, I think the grappler will be able to wear on the striker and eventually the striker will gas out. But we've seen it go the other way yep. when there is elite footwork and just a top of the food chain type kickboxer on the other side, which like that is Fiore.
Yep.
So
and spamming sidekicks is going to keep distance, right? So like, yeah, you're going to have to grab my leg, but it's really, I mean, it's just Blanchfield's so goddamn young. Like I always forget mm-hmm. how young she is, right? So like this, a loss
24.
For,
yeah, 24, 10-year age difference.
Yeah, 10-year gap. A loss for her is not like end of career type shit, but a win for her is like, God, can you fucking match up to these, to the champion? You know, because this is a title shot. This is your title shot, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess we can never say that because you never know what's going to happen. But if Blanchfield wins,
Thug Rose.
If Blanchfield wins and doesn't get the next title shot, it's wild. Man, this fight, it's like I always almost a little bit sleep on Blanchfield. There's something about her style that I kind of just sleep on her, but it's like, dude, she wins. I mean, she lost, what, Tracy Cortez in a split decision?
When she was 19
but that's
years
what I'm
old.
Saying so like I'm not holding that against her, but it's like every time I expect her to kind of be like, I think this person might get her, they don't get her, and it's like, maybe it's time for me to stop being a goddamn hater. But I don't know, this fight can either be really close or it can be a real like snooze fest to me. It has the opportunity, but the thing with Blanchfield is we used it on our Monday podcast, hunger. Right, she's hungry. This woman is hungry, and that right there can be that fifth round determining factor if they make it that far. And this is where it's going to be exciting, because I almost want to see this go five rounds, right?
Yeah,
because we know Grasso and Shevchenko can do that. I kind of want to see this go five rounds to see who has that dig deep in them, so I can be excited about their title shot coming up.
Oh yeah, because we need to see it from them. Like I get booked for it, but it's different actually doing it. And guess what? Your next one going to be a bit against the best fighter you've ever faced, and it's scheduled for five rounds. So, and I'm glad you brought up the hunger, because I do think Fiore is a little different than the average like 34-year-old type fighter, right? I mean, she's 11 fights into her career. I think she's sitting at 10-1 or 11-1. Sorry, 12 fights into her career.
Yep.
Her only loss was her very first professional fight against a much larger Liam McCourt, who fights, I want to say, featherweight over Bellator. So, you know, huge size difference there. And so, since then, Fiore has been on the come up. She is a very, very talented kickboxer. And you've just seen, I think she has that hunger too, right? Because it's not like she's reached the pinnacle of her career and then was on the downside and now has worked her way back. No, like this is her run.
Yep.
And I wonder if it's even more, if there's an even greater hunger there, because guess what? She's 34.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you lose this one, there's a bunch more, you know, young ones coming up. Then now you got to fight Macy Barber. Now you got to fight, you know, potentially Thug Rose. You got to fight Natalia Silva, Carini. Like, there's so many coming up. Like, this is her shot.
A lot of hungry people in that division.
Yes, it's a fucking awesome division.
Yeah.
But she has the better wins, save for the Tyler Santos win, because that is a phenomenal win
for
Blanchfield. But Blanchfield right now has taken all those logical steps, right? Like, boom, Molly, or what was it? Miranda Maverick got her out of there. Maverick, then up to JJ Aldrich, out of there. Molly McCann, who was riding the hype train, boom, out of there. Jessica Andrade, which we know, very up and down.
Yeah, but it's still a good win.
Still a test.
Scout, yep.
Yep, got her out of there. And then it was, hey, Tyler Santos is coming off of, you know, arguably a win over Shevchenko, not in the judges' eyes, but a very, very close fight. It was kind of the first time we saw Shevchenko be vulnerable. Yeah, at flyweight, and then we saw what Grasso did, but got a good win there. And so she's passing every single test, but she has not faced somebody like Fiore. When you look at what she did, what Blanchfield did against Andrade. Her striking, it was like, oh yeah, her striking's really improved. Well, she's throwing straight shots against a shorter fighter who wings hooks.
Yep.
So yeah, it's gonna look good.
Yeah.
When she fought Santos, she connected, but it was not the same. Like, I don't think anyone was coming to that. Like, man, her striking's really good. Right? She had chin up in the air.
Yeah.
She was getting pieced up a little bit. It was only once she was really able to start wearing Santos down over the course of the fight and really into round three, where it was like, okay, Blanchfield has it. And even then, you couldn't be super confident once it hit the scorecards.
That's what I was just about to say, is it really took her, like, breaking her down, though. And the third round was the... That's the thing, man. It seems like I always sleep, but she gets it done. So it's just another going to be one of those times where I'm like, oh, she got it done again. It's just Fiore, like you kind of mentioned, she has the better competition overall.
Mm-hmm.
Older, you know, some age does put a factor in terms of like athletic ability, but it also puts a factor in just the mindset and the calm and the experience. So yeah, this one, the fight of consequence in this division right now, right? Like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess the title fight's the fight of consequence, but this is
title fight riding.
Yeah.
Right. The belt's riding on this. And these ones are always more, I think it was last week we talked about like the come up's the more exciting thing. Yeah. Right. So like Shevchenko, Grasso, they've held the title.
Correct.
Right. Neither one of these women has.
Exactly.
And so there's that excitement of like, exactly. Ooh, who's the next one? One thing that I am very interested in, might play into Fiore's hand. We're in the big cage because it's a road show. So even though it's a fight night, Fiore's very kick heavy.
Yeah.
Are the kicks, is she going to be as comfortable throwing the kicks with Blanchfield there, knowing Blanchfield's ability on the ground?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm interested in. She didn't throw as many of the side kicks against Rose as she normally does. And Rose being a very accomplished grappler, also having very good footwork. So I don't like that's what I'm the footwork battle and who gets to fight at their distance, I think is what's going to be it for this fight.
Absolutely.
Anything else on your end?
No thought.
All right. We have a good one this week. Cannot wait. As always, appreciate y'all for listening. Love and respect.
Later.